Well, good morning. We're starting a new class, which hopefully will last a couple, 3 months. We are back to our Puritan paperback series, and this week we'll have a biography of John Bunyan as we're going to study his work, The Fear of God. We've looked at this topic, this book, back in 1999 was the last time we did it as an adult class. And there's been a lot of things happened since 1999, so it's been quite a while. And it's also been a class we've had in for the high school students over the years, but we haven't revisited the topic in a while. So this morning, we'll start off with a biography of John Bunyan, give you some information about him, get an idea of who he was and when he lived and what happened to him. And then the following 2 weeks, we will have, listening to a sermon, we're going to break it up into two sections, that was preached, I believe, in the early 70s by Al Martin, who is now retired as a pastor in New Jersey, I think. Thank you. It's an absolutely excellent introduction into the topic of the fear of God, and we'll take 2 weeks to cover it, to have a bit of a discussion next week, the second week, and then the fourth week we'll actually start reading, discussing the book itself. So if you don't have a book, that's fine. We'll get you a book, but you don't need one for a little while yet. The book we'll be studying, I have several editions here. This is the one we'll probably use. It was it's been updated in terms of its punctuation, layout, and outline by Solideo Gloria Books, and it's a very good edition. It's available enough that we'll probably use it. I think this is the edition we bought a number of the high school students through the years, so we'll probably continue with this one. There are some others out there that are actively in print that we'll probably not use those, just so we can keep everybody on the same page. Unfortunately, the office of biblical editor had not been invented yet, and so some of the early paging and outlines are really just tough to follow. And so Solideo Gloria did a good job of putting it together, and so we'll use that edition. So I'll send out some mail to this effect for everyone, but if you don't have a copy, if your household does not have a copy of Bunyan's Fear of God, then we'll go ahead and the congregation will provide you one. It's available, I'm sure it's available in Kindle format if you prefer that. It's in print in a couple of different editions, but we'll use the one from SDG. And if your household doesn't have a copy, we'll provide one for you. So I'll send out some mail so you can be aware of where we're going and get you one in time. So we don't need to raise your hands to tell me now what you need, but we'll make sure you have a copy. Before we start, how many have read something other than Pilgrim's Progress by Bunyan? How many books do you think Bunyan wrote in his life? Shout out some guesses.
12,
wrong. All right.
37?
No, wrong. Higher. Higher.
Right.
50. Higher.
60.
60, yeah, he wrote about 60 books. Some longer, some shorter, but he was actually quite the writer. And so we'll look at a few of the key events in his life. Bunyan is a remarkable individual, and he's well worth getting to know. He's well worth spending some time learning from him. So let's jump into the biography. So Bunyan entered the world in 1628 in the town of Elstow, and here's probably one of the better-known pictures of him. There are lots and lots of pictures of Bunyan, and many of them have him portrayed with a rounder face and a slightly larger forehead and almost a jovial manner. But this is a famous portrait. I don't remember who did it, but it's interesting. Up in the top right-hand corner, it looks to me like they're trying to depict him in his prison cell. You can see with one of the fixtures to keep him fastened, I guess. But this is more or less what he looked like in his, as an adult. So Elstow is in the county of Bedfordshire, which is about 50 miles north of London, slightly to the west. London and would be down where you see the water coming into the country, so just down into the west there, about 50 miles or so. And he was born to Thomas and Margaret Bunyan. So there's really not much known about his very early life. His father was a brazier or a tinker. Do you know what a tinker is? Not a tinkerer, but what a tinker is? Okay, a tinker is someone who mends metal objects, generally pots and pans and such. And it's quite likely, given the day, that Thomas was the type of person who traveled from village to village looking for business, repairing things on site, working with brass and whatever other metals people had. At that time, obviously, the availability of buying new pots and pans was rather slim. You couldn't get delivery even with a Prime account, Amazon, in Elstow back in those days. And so the office of tinker was a pretty important one. So, but being a tinker carries with it a bit of a stigma in the eyes of many villagers. This idea of someone who's roaming, perhaps appears to be somewhat vagrant, peddling from town to town to fix things. And there is speculation that Bunyan's family actually had gypsy origins, and that they were to be an untrustworthy lot. I think that's probably a bit unwarranted, but you can see why people might be given to that idea. Bunyan himself describes his early years as being of a low and inconsiderable generation. My father's house being of that rank that is meanest and most despised of all the families in the land. Wherefore I have not here as others to boast of noble blood or of high-born state according to the flesh. So Bunyan, in many different ways, was a very common man, and his family was not well endowed, and he didn't come from noble birth. And he was a self-educated man. He never attended college or university. And so this idea of him being of a low and mean estate is pretty common in terms of... I don't think anybody thought much of Bunyan at the time, and certainly not during his younger years. Now, as to what kind of life did he lead as a young man, and Bunyan is stark and completely unflattering in his own depiction of his early years. He says, as for my own natural life, for the time that I was without God in the world, it was indeed according to the course of this world and the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. So you'll recognize some of the biblical language there. But this is his frankness in describing himself. It was my delight to be taken captive by the devil at his will, being filled with all unrighteousness that from a child I had but few equals, both for cursing, for swearing, lying, and blaspheming the holy name of God. And who writes that about himself in their autobiography? Bunyan was known for his riotous living, had quite the reputation, but he was also known as somebody who had a very troubled mind. And I suppose it's hard to understand what's in the mind of anyone, but Bunyan's own descriptions about how troubled his mind was when he was a young man and even through his early adult years is rather remarkable. So when you read, for instance, Grace Abounding to the Chief of Sinners, which is his autobiography, in one sense, there are other books that are autobiographical, you'll get the idea. He wishes to convey that he is a troubled individual and he has been abused and tormented in mind for quite some time. He thought that God himself had sent him dreams and sort of night terrors simply to terrorize him as a young man because of his extreme sinfulness. He sensed that he did so offend the Lord that even in my childhood God did scare and affrighten me with fearful dreams and did terrify me with fearful visions. For often I, after I had spent this and the other day in sin, I have in my bed been greatly afflicted while asleep with the apprehensions of devils and wicked spirits, who still, as I then thought, labored to draw me away with them, of which I could never be rid. So he seems to be plagued with not just the ordinary terrifying instances of dreams that children have now and again, but for something that continues on a pretty regular basis year after year. One of his biographers, George Orfor, quotes a friend of Bunyan, and this friend also wrote a biography, and this fellow elaborates a bit more on the patterns of sleep and how terrifying they were in Bunyan's life. He said, "These dreams often made him cry out in his sleep and alarm the house as if somebody was about to murder him. And being waked, he would start and stare about him with such a wildness as if some real apparition had yet remained. And generally those dreams were about evil spirits and monstrous shapes and forms that presented themselves to him in threatening postures, as they would have taken him away or torn him in pieces. At times they seemed to belch flame, at other times a continuous smoke, with horrible noises and roaring. Once he dreamed he saw the face of heavens, as it were, all on fire, the firmament cracking and shivering with the noise of mighty thunders, and an archangel flew in the midst of heaven, sounding a trumpet, and a glorious throne was seated in the east, whereon sat one in brightness like the morning star, upon which he, thinking it was the end of the world, fell upon his knees and with uplifted hands toward heaven cried, 'O Lord God, have mercy on me. What shall I do? For the day of judgment is come and I am not prepared.' When immediately he heard a voice behind him exceedingly loud saying, 'Repent.' And at another time he dreamed he was in a pleasant place, jovial and rioting, banqueting and feasting his senses, when a mighty earthquake suddenly rent the earth and made a wide gap, out of which came bloody flames, and the figures of men tossed up in globes of fire and falling down again with horrible cries, shrieks, and execrations, that is, curses, while some devils that were there mingled with him, and laughed aloud at their torments. And whilst he stood trembling at his sight, he thought the earth sunk under him, and a circle of flame enclosed him. But when he fancied he was just at that point to perish, one in white shining raiment descended and plucked him out of the dreadful place, while the devils cried after him to leave him with them, to take the just punishment of the sins he had deserved. And yet he escaped the danger and leaped for joy when he woke and found that it was just a dream." That's a harrowing account. But apparently this was really the pattern of his life, is to be tormented in mind. So when it comes to Bunyan's years in schooling, his formal education at best was meager. It does appear, I mean, he obviously had some schooling, but the precise amount is unknown. They've tried to determine just how much, how many years he attended, but Bunyan's not very clear in these details, and in some cases he's deliberately vague about the times and the years that have gone by in his life. What we do know is that he learned to read and write, but that he almost certainly never attended any kind of college or university, and it's pretty well assumed that he never got to any point such as high school as we would have today. And in fact, so plain spoken is his language and the manner in which he communicated with people that his first pastor, John Gifford, wrote in a dedication to one of Bunyan's books called A Few Sighs from Hell, that he says, I verily believe God had counted him faithful and put him into the ministry, and though his outward condition and former employment was mean and his human learning small," that's how he describes Bunyan and his writing, yet he is one that has acquaintance with God and taught by the Spirit, and used by God's hand to do souls good. For to my knowledge, there are many who have felt the power of the word delivered by him, and I doubt not that many more, if the Lord will continue him in his work, benefit as well." So Bunyan, and when you read his works, you can see he is a plain-spoken individual, but he is full of insightful truth. Now, one of the more, the fact that the collected works of, I don't know if they're collected or considered complete, this is volume one. There are three volumes of Bunyan's works. They're all about this size. It's nicely done. I suspect this was probably assembled somewhere in the 1800s, be my guess. I don't know the dates of the editor here, Ofer, but I suspect so. So this is a guy who would have pushed hard to have a high school education and yet could write this volume of material, much of which is exceptionally profitable for anyone to read. So don't let Bunyan's lack of formal education be off-putting to you. He was mightily used by God and one of the most persecuted Puritans in the late 1600s in England. But there's another aspect of Bunyan that is just downright strange, and that is Bunyan is what I would call the proto-redneck in his younger years. There's an account of some of his activities that just defies understanding, but I'm sure all of you can imagine Larry the Cable Guy making fun of Bunyan for this particular episode. So Bunyan not only had these tormenting dreams and these terrors that afflicted him for many years, but he was close to death on a number of occasions, both in his military service as well as just in and about Esrow and Bedford. But there was one occasion which was wholly brought upon his own neglect, and I guess you'd call it redneckness, English style. He says, being in the field with one of my companions, it chanced that an adder passed over the highway. So I, having a stick in my hand, struck her over the back, and having stunned her, I forced open her mouth with my stick and plucked her sting out with my fingers. By which act, had God not been merciful to me, I might, by my desperateness, have brought myself to my end. Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, why is it that it just seemed like a good idea to whack a snake because you had a stick in your hand? And then what do you do? Well, let's see if we can pluck out its teeth. So, over the course, or perhaps just a few weeks in duration of time, John's mother and his sister, Margaret, died in 1644, so he was born in 1628. So it's not clear what exactly happened, but it looks like he lost them within a two-month time span, and it was shortly thereafter that Bunyan joins the army. It seems pretty settled today. No one seems to question which side of the army he joined, whether he was parliamentary or royal, but apparently there was some debate about this years ago that didn't know which side of the forces he was on for the Civil War. And during his tenure with as an enlisted man in the army, he sees a lot of atrocities and he nearly dies. His service was unremarkable in many regards, except for the fact that God preserved his life. And he does write about his military career in allegory form in different places. But he returns home in 1647. So in 1648, he gets married in a rather astonishing way. I'm still not quite sure how this worked out as well as it did. For Bunyan, he gets married, but he describes it, "I changed my condition into a married state." Now there's a guy who can romance a girl, huh? You just imagine what kind of sweet talker he might have been. "How are you?" "Well, I've changed my condition to that of a married state." "Hey, cool." So by itself, Bunyan getting married wouldn't be remarkable, but the woman appears to be about the best thing that ever happened to him. So that is always the truth. Bunyan indeed married above his station, and he married someone better. But he was induced, as one of his biographers writes, by the persuasion of friends under the invisible guidance of God to enter into the marriage state. Such a youth, then only 20 years of age, would naturally be expected to marry some young woman as hardened as himself. Now, bear in mind that this childhood reputation he had of being a blasphemer and someone who swears and curses is still with Bunyan. He is just as rough as he was as a young man, and he is known for being this sort of vicious individual. His army years did nothing to soften him. But he made a very different choice. His earliest biographer writes with this simplicity that his poverty in regular and irregular course of life made it very difficult for him to get a wife suitable to his inclination. And because none that were rich would yield to his allurements, he found himself constrained to marry one without any fortune, though very virtuous, loving, and conformably obedient and obliging, being born of good, honest, godly parents who had instructed her as well as they were able in the ways of true and saving knowledge. So Bunyan seems to have alighted upon just exactly the sort of wife that he needed. He couldn't find a rich one to marry, and he instead married someone who was quite poor as well, and whose father had already died. But she seemed to be a rather pious individual. Mrs. Bunyan, strange that we have no idea what her name was. Just imagine from her perspective what her fortunes look like as she was being courted to marry this tinker and someone in possession of all these absolutely miserable mental and verbal habits. I mean, I can't imagine it was an easy marriage for her, but she does appear to have been a very good influence on him. So both John and Mrs. B. were quite poor. They really did have next to nothing. I think Bunyan exaggerates just a bit, but he said his vast holding was not so much household stuff as a dish or a spoon between us both. It appears that she brought two books with her from the marriage that her father had left her when he died. In 1650, they had a daughter whose name was Mary. Now, some speculate that, as was often the custom, Mary was John's wife, and they named the daughter after her, but there's nothing conclusively to tell us. Mary was also born blind. And in 1654, another daughter named Elizabeth is born. In 1656, a son named Thomas, and then a son named John, who appears to be born sometime between 1657 and 1658. And so by the time of 1655, the Bunyans have moved to Bedford, where they'll make their lifelong home, leaving Elsreel, which is not a very far journey. They're in Bedfordshire County, and Bedford was just down the road a bit. So when it comes to Bunyan's conversion, though, it was a long and tortured experience. It seems to have taken quite a number of years, and we're not really quite sure what's happening. He has really no spiritual inclination when he marries in 1648, and he doesn't end up joining the church until about 1653. And during this time, probably through the influences of his wife, he becomes acquainted with church attendance, reading the scriptures, and trying to outwardly reform his life. And he takes this outward reformation quite seriously. Orford, one of his biographers, notes that Bunyan's progress in his conversion is, without exception, the most astonishing of any that has been published. That may be a bit of an exaggeration. It is an astonishing conversion. Whether it is the most or not is questionable. But Orford also describes Bunyan as having a distempered brain. When you read Grace Abounding, the longest section, far and away, is his conversion experience, and he is completely unflattering toward himself and his thoughts. And he has these temptations that seem to plague him for extremely long durations. I think the longest I counted was a 2-year span of a temptation that would not leave him. Temptations to sell Christ, to jettison what he was pursuing. Temptations to go back to loving devils again. He seems to spend these 5 years as he's roaming the countryside thinking about things and trying to reform himself from the outside in to just have an absolutely miserable life. It really is quite depressing in many respects. There's an account that Bunyan he's arrested by these torments on a number of occasions by pretty odd circumstances. And there's an account of a reproof that he was offered by a very loose and ungodly wretch. So I'm going to read this brief account of Bunyan, who's in the midst of swearing and blaspheming and carrying on somewhere in town. Orford writes that the next blow which fell upon his hardened spirit was still more deeply felt because it was given by one from whom he could have least expected it. He was standing at a neighbor's shop window, belching out oaths after his wonted manner. Here was a disease that set all human skill at defiance, but the great, the almighty physician cured it with a strange physic. Had any professor reproved him, it might have been passed by as a matter of course, but it was so ordered that a woman who was notoriously a very loose and ungodly wretch protested that she trembled to hear him swear and curse at the most fearful rate, that he was the ungodliest fellow she had ever heard, and that he was able to spoil all the youth in the whole town. Public reproof from the lips of such a woman was an arrow that pierced his inmost soul, and it effected a reformation marvelous to his companions and bordering upon the miraculous. So just imagine, just standing outside a shop window, belching out oaths and taking God's name in vain, and to be reproved by such an irresolute woman. It's an astonishing thing to have happened. So Bunyan makes a side comment about his lifestyle when he says, "I wished with all my heart that I might be a little child again." This must be under one of these times of reflection after being reproved. "That my father might learn me to speak without this wicked way of swearing. For," thought I am so accustomed to it that it is vain for me to think of reformation. For I thought that never could be." You see this moment of despair when he says, "What I really want out of life is to go back and live again and have my dad correct me and keep in check some of these vicious mental habits that I've picked up. Because I don't think there's any way I'm going to escape. I think I am so far ruined that I cannot change or mend my ways." There's another instance of his heart being pierced while he was Sabbath breaking by playing games. And if we had more time, we'd go back and read just a little bit that the King of England was, three kings of England were especially intent on encouraging game playing on the Sabbath day. And there was a, let me read his account of what happened to him while he was out on a lawn playing a game. He says, "As I was in the midst of a game of cat." Now that caught my attention right there. I thought, this is going to be good, a game of cat. But it was Sabbath breaking, so I had to temper my enthusiasm. "So as I was in the midst of a game of cat, and having struck it one blow from the hole," oh man, this is great. I love this story. "Just as I was about to strike it a second time," how do you get to have a game like this? Oh, for the 1600s to come back again. "A voice did suddenly dart from heaven into my soul, which said, 'Will thou leave thy sins and go to heaven, or have thy sins and go to hell?' At this I was put to an exceeding maze. Wherefore, leaving my bat upon the ground, I looked up to heaven, and was as if I had with the eyes of my understanding seen the Lord Jesus looking down upon me as being very hotly displeased with me." So here he is in the midst of Sabbath breaking out in this field with some friends, doing what would be otherwise a noble endeavor of playing cat. And he hears a voice. "Are you going to leave your sins and repent?" That's harrowing stuff, and this is the type of thing that would happen to Bunyan and would follow him for years. If we had more time, I'd tell you more details about the game of cat, but we're going to run out of time this morning, so yeah, it's too bad. I'll just leave it with your imagination. So Bunyan endures long spans of time where he's plagued with doubts even of his salvation or even the possibility of salvation, whether or not to sell Christ. He wasn't sure if he even had Christ, whether or not it wouldn't just be easier to return to the devil and to the terrors of judgment. He became a very superstitious person in a religious fashion. He became deeply observant to various church ways, but he found that that didn't offer him any peace, and actually at times he felt condemned by them. But he kept reading his Bible, and he read it a lot. He became very familiar with the Scriptures. He was also attending some sermons, and the means of grace are making a good end within Bunyan. So this shows the absolute providence in Bunyan's life by the hand of God in ordering his affairs. So he's standing by this shop window when this wretch comes and rebukes him because of his ungodliness. But Bunyan himself describes one of the days that was a significant turning point for him. He said, "But upon a day, the good providence of God called me to Bedford to work at my calling, being a tinker, traveling about. And in one of the streets of that town, I came where there were three or four poor women sitting at a door in the sun, talking about the things of God. And being now willing to hear their discourse, I drew near to hear what they had said. For I was now a brisk talker of myself in all manners of religion. But I may say I heard, but understood not what they were saying, for they were far above and out of my reach. Their talk was about a new birth, the work of God in their hearts. How God had visited their souls with his love for the Lord Jesus, and with what words and promises they had been refreshed, comforted, supported against the temptations of the devil. Moreover, they reasoned by the suggestions and temptation of Satan in particular, and told each other by what means they had been afflicted, and how they were borne up under his assaults. They also discoursed of their own wretchedness of heart and of their unbelief, and did contemn, slight, and abhor their own righteousness as filthy and insufficient to do them any good." It's a remarkable conversation that he happens upon during the course of fixing up these pots and pans. Just a few poor women are about discussing the Christian life. It's amazing, isn't it? You should never really quite see what consequences God will draw from ordinary circumstances. Well, realizing that he didn't see the Bible this way, he didn't think about the Bible this way, this actually sent him into more depths of despair, that he didn't have any idea what they were talking about. But over the course of time, over the course of years, Bunyan eventually realized that his righteousness was in heaven and it was not in himself. The righteousness that he had would be Christ's righteousness for him. This seems to be a real pivotal point, and I think it happens as he's walking across the field that he comes to the realization that his righteousness is in heaven. In fact, Bunyan, when he comes to this understanding that there was an alien righteousness being given to him, describes the transformation it made in his life by saying, "Now did my chains fall off my legs. Indeed, I was loosed from my afflictions and irons, and my temptations also fled away. So that from that time, those dreadful scriptures of God left off to trouble me. Now went I also home rejoicing in the grace and love of God. And here, therefore, I lived for some time very sweetly and at peace with God through Christ. Oh, methought Christ. Christ. There was nothing but Christ that was before my eyes." So this seems to be the culmination of this slow and gradual conversion of Bunyan. Sometime in 1653, Bunyan joined St. John's in Bedford, which was under the pastor leadership of John Gifford, who we mentioned earlier, wrote that introduction to one of Bunyan's books. This was a nonconformist congregation. And 2 years later, in 1655, he ups his family and they decide to move to Bedford. And he becomes a deacon within the congregation, a job to which he was very well suited. So we finally have a time in Bunyan's life by 1655 that he has a wife, he has his children, he has peace with God, he's now a member of the church, he is walking with Christ, and he seems to be a settled man and free from the troubles that had bothered him. However, in 1655, shortly after the move to Bedford, Mrs. Bunyan dies and leaves him with four young children, one of which is the oldest is blind. Later that same year, his pastor, John Gifford, dies as well. So all during this time, Bunyan maintains his trade of being a tinker, but he's also writing and he's publishing. He's putting out different pamphlets and small books. He's taking on the Quakers and a group called the Ranters. And in 1657, he's formally recognized as a pastor of the congregation. See, just imagine the span, the distance this man has traveled from his years of just 10 years or so earlier leaving the army and the atrocities and post-traumatic stress disorder. I don't know all that troubled Bunyan, but that's a lot of movement in a short amount of time. And in 1658, he is arrested for the first time, probably on charges of failing to attend church, an established church, and or preaching without a license. But nothing seems to come of this arrest. And he remarries in 1659. His new wife is named Elizabeth, and through her they eventually have two more children, Sarah in 1667 and Joseph in 1672. But late in 1660, Bunyan, at the age of 32, is arrested and in prison. He was denied bail and eventually indicted for devilishly and perniciously abstaining from coming to church to hear divine service, and as a common upholder of several unlawful meetings and conventicles, to the great disturbance and distraction of the good subjects of this kingdom, contrary to the laws of our sovereign Lord the King. I think those are the words of the indictment. So this is, it's grating to imagine indictment being worded this way when it conveys just the opposite. He's in prison for 12 years. 12 long years. So here is Bunyan, who is a new pastor. He seems to be maintaining his trade as a tinker. He has a new wife because he's recently been widowed, and this wife has four stepchildren to raise, one of whom is blind. His wife Elizabeth, shortly after he's incarcerated, gives birth to a son, only to have him die early, presumably because of an early onset of labor. So it's easy to see that Bunyan suffered a lot in life. I mean, he suffered as an unconverted individual, that the mental torments really took a toll on him. He suffered physically. But now, after coming to Christ and having peace with God, he's given a lot to suffer for a dozen years or so, losing his wife, his new wife, losing their child. Really, really terrible stuff here. So Bunyan was quite diligent to provide in whatever ways he could for his family while he was imprisoned. He is continuing to write books, and he made laces, presumably some sort of shoe or boot laces. He's allowed visitors, and it seems as if his blind daughter Mary is the one who visits him most frequently. Being apart from Mary seems to, Bunyan describes his separation from Mary as having his flesh tore from his bones. It's his daughter who appears to be the one that brings him food and frequently visits him, probably bringing him supplies as well. And there are occasions, as the jailers change hands over time, that kind jailers actually allow him to leave for short bits. But that's not always the case. There were many occasions when Bunyan was released, and he might even go preach on a Sabbath out in the field, but then have to be back. So became more of a house arrest problem. But there were times when he was tormented and made to believe he was going to hang very soon. So over the course of 12 years, you can imagine that this would just be an enormously difficult lifestyle, to be torn from your family and such, and never being able to be settled. So Bunyan has... this is really, really hard to read, but it's a composite of things I thought you might be interested in. So here's an early church that Bunyan was part of, really during his early conversion stages. And this is the jail in Bedford where he was held. I'm not sure within the jail. All of this has been removed, and there's a new bridge, and none of that's around anymore. So here's one of his early houses, and of course the obligatory chair. I don't know why we see Bunyan's chair, but there it is. And well after his death, we'll see another picture of it. There's a monument that was established for Bunyan in Bedford. So his wife Elizabeth, during his imprisonment, is a remarkable woman. Here she's raising these four stepchildren, and she is on several occasions made pleas, articulate, strong, passionate pleas, to get her husband released from prison, and was unable to. Somebody had the good sense to record for us an image of a jug Bunyan used, so that's an authentic Bunyan jug there. I thought you might want to see. This is a very dark, in the sense of lack of light, picture here. But here is the Bedford jail, filled with who knows what kind of riffraff. Bunyan composing, If this was Pilgrim's Progress, it would have been a subsequent imprisonment, but you can see it would have been unpleasant experiences. And there's lots of visual imagery about Bunyan, especially about Pilgrim's Progress, but here is a work done, Follinsbee, in 1864, of Bunyan with his daughter Mary. He's dressed awfully nice for jail, in my mind. Here is a monument built toward or for Bunyan on the corner of this hotel. It's apparently under, they want to turn it into a luxury hotel in the last year or so. I don't remember when they were having this debate, and people were complaining that we're going to lose this statue of monument to Bunyan. And the idea of Bunyan, who was poor his entire life, ending up being set on the corner of a luxury hotel strikes a number of folks as more than ironic. Here's a picture of Christian battling Apollyon. The visual imagery of Pilgrim's Progress is so rich that you can imagine there's a lot of artwork. So this is a picture of that statue I showed earlier of Bunyan, well done, and we'll get to this in just a second here. So file this under the only in a government operation would you expect to see this sort of thing. It's 1672. Bunyan is released, but he's not released immediately. He's kept for a number of months, probably a good 6 months after an event happened here. And so this really is an extraordinary circumstance that, in my mind, just defies reason. But while Bunyan was a prisoner in these terrible conditions for preaching the glad tidings of salvation, or in the mysterious legal jargon of the period, he has been found guilty of holding conventicles and preaching without his license. He's given a license to preach as a reprieve, and yet he's still held in prison for preaching without a license, even though he's been given a license now to preach. So Bunyan stays in prison, 6 months or whatever, longer than was necessary. So Bunyan returns to the pastorate upon his release in 1672, and he stays there the rest of his life. He continues to write. He writes lots of books. He doesn't seem to be traveling all that much. He dedicates his life to ministering to the flock in Bedford. He does occasionally travel, appears to be mostly down to London, and when he does travel, when word gets out that Bunyan is in town, he draws very large crowds. He was known as a terrific preacher, and people flocked to hear him, but not so much in Bedford. The church there in Bedford was never really that large, I think, during his time, maybe a couple hundred members at very most. So he's imprisoned again very briefly in 1675, again for preaching, for about 6 months, and it's thought that it's here that he writes Pilgrim's Progress. And in August of 1688, at the age of 60, Bunyan rides to the west of London to a town called Reading, at least we think that's where he was, to assist in a matter of reconciliation between the father and the son. So this is just exactly the sort of job you would expect a dedicated pastor to be doing. And on his way back, he encounters some hard rains. I think he travels through London, but it's very cold, and he encounters these hard rains, and he stays with an acquaintance or a friend or something, but he gets sick. And he has a terrible fever, and it lasts for 10 days, and he dies. It's likely his family and his close friends never knew where he was or what happened to him. Doesn't appear that he was able to see his family before he died. So this trip down to Reading was his last trip. So we're running short on time, so I'll make this kind of quick. What do we take away from the life of Bunyan? How should we think of John Bunyan? Well, I'll give you five things to think about. One, he was a humble man who endured great suffering throughout his entire life. He was one of the earliest men to be in prison under the vicious acts of the various kings. He stayed in prison a long time. Certainly others were killed or transported, but Bunyan was in prison for a long time, and he suffered and suffered and suffered his whole life. He loved reading the Bible, and he read it often. During his incarceration, it's thought that he had the Bible and John Fox's Acts and Monuments for companions, and that was about it. Spurgeon describes Bunyan as someone who bled Bible. He was also greatly moved at some point in his life by reading Luther's commentary on Galatians. But outside of that, though he is a remarkable individual in terms of his output, we just don't see much in the way of what contributed to his education. Bunyan was a pastor, and he loved his flock. We should remember him first and foremost as a pastor. Bunyan loved the gospel, and he loved Jesus. As much as abundantly clear as you read his sermons and his other writings. And Bunyan loved to write, and he loved to preach. And he could speak to people at any age or station in life. In this sense, he was remarkable. He's written poetry, he has allegories, long stories, he has sermons, he refutes errors and heretics. Really is a remarkable individual, and contributed much to our having solid Christian material even for these days. So this book, The Fear of God, is going to be our study guide for the next 2 months or so, maybe three. We'll see how long it takes. We'll talk a little bit more about the contents of the book and the layout of the book next week. But I want you to start thinking about what it is that you think about when you hear the phrase, the fear of God. And what do you remember? This was written by a man who suffered a great deal. And when he died, he's kept in Bunhill Fields in London. This was a monument they made to his grave. Here he rests. Bunyan, if it weren't for Pilgrim's Progress, I'm sure far fewer people would know about him, but because of that work and that work alone, he's become quite famous, and it's even quite a tourist destination in England. So I hope that was helpful. We're a little short on time. Are there any questions?
Can you remind us of the state of the church at the time, and who were the kings?
Who were the kings? Well, the time that gave him the greatest trouble would have... I mean, he certainly lived under Cromwell, and... Yeah, yes, yes. Oh, well, both, even his son then. But then certainly under Charles II, who vigorously sought to make people's lives miserable. Bunyan was not a Presbyterian. He was a nonconformist, which put him outside the Church of England and liable to persecution, but he was a Baptist through and through. Any other questions? Right. That's true. It's also unclear what role the local magistrates actually had to enforce these laws that imprisoned people. There's some speculation that he was unjustly imprisoned. Well, we'll end it there for today.